have community transmission back in Auckland, serious enough, given we don't know how much, to put Auckland back into level three. So joining us again on Sunday morning, and we thank him for doing so, he's got a busy schedule today, is Professor Michael Baker, the public health physician from the University of Otago. Good morning, Michael.
Morena, Jim.
Morena. And today is an anniversary.
Yes, I mean, this is exactly 1 year since our first case was confirmed. That actually arrived 2 days earlier, but it took a little while for them to get admitted to hospital and be tested. So it's a remarkable milestone for New Zealand.
Yes, and I suppose something about coincidence, a whole year since it first began. Well, it is still going, and there are now multiple points of risk, as it was said on the media conference last night in Auckland, multiple potential contact events. Now, we just don't know how many other people in the community may be carrying the virus yet, we hope not, or who may be at risk, Michael.
Yes, I mean, I think most New Zealanders now understand the decision-making process. I think the government's very transparent about it. If you have a situation where it's a manageable outbreak where you know the cases and the contact tracing system in New Zealand works very well, and that identifies contacts and it keeps testing and following up until all of the contacts are safely quarantined or isolated. And so that works well. But when we have the next tier up, if you like, where there are cases in the community and we can't be certain how many there are, then unfortunately we're in this situation now. We don't, you know, there are several factors operating here. One is that this case hasn't a definite source of infection, likely to be part of the Papatoetoe outbreak, but again, that's not certain. But I think the bigger factor now is that they've had several days in the community going to high-risk locations and potentially infecting other people. And of course, we have got the more infectious UK variant that's likely to be involved here as well.
Case M, and of course his mother now, Case N as well. Case M is only a casual plus contact, as are most of the students at Papatoetoe High School. We need to know how Case M was infected. Can we find that out?
Yes, well, that will be a challenge. I think we've got, you know, of course, the several tools to help. And initially, it's the epidemiological evidence. So, of course, you interview people about their contact patterns. The fact that they are, you know, a household member with a someone from the school would suggest that potentially there's a wider circle of people connected with the school who could have transmitted this virus. So, I mean, the source is pretty likely to be that part of that outbreak. And, of course, we've got the genome testing, which is a wonderful tool to really tell us how these chains of transmission are operating. And sometimes it gives us, you know, surprising new information we wouldn't have. So we're likely to understand how they got infected, and that will be reassuring. But there's still the huge challenge now of making sure that any other contacts who may be infected are again identified and isolated and quarantined.
And Dr. Ashley Bloomfield says the contact tracing system has come under pressure. Is it the system or is it human fallibility? Do we need a better system for coping with, you know, the mistakes that humans make?
Yes, well, I think you have to always assume there's human error and that not everyone necessarily complies with the instructions or even understands them sometimes. So I think that, if you like, there has to be a bit of redundancy in the system. And there are, you know, additional checks and balances. But in the end, that's why we are using the lockdown system and going up to level three, obviously, in Auckland, because that does help to deal with the limitations of contact tracing, as we're seeing in this instance.
I know you're a public health professor, not a politician, and the PM has taken a softly, softly approach with this. But provision exists for making people stay home. So how close are we now to invoking that, do you suspect?
Well, I think if you know there are close contacts who are not adhering with recommendations, yes, I think there are the powers there to detain them if necessary. And fortunately, they've very rarely been needed in the current pandemic. I mean, the problem is, of course, that There is still parts of the system where you need public support. You can't pass a law that tells people if you have symptoms you must get tested in the community. This is the part that still relies on a high level of public trust and support. And so I think the Prime Minister and the government and health officials are correct in trying to encourage maximum voluntary public engagement with the system.
Yes, but nevertheless, you know, going to work or visiting a vape store when you should have been isolating at home. As the Papatoetoe High School principal says, Vaughan Curio, the family didn't intend to get sick, they should be left alone, and social media criticism is unhelpful. But a lot is riding on a successful outcome here, is the flip side of that, isn't it?
It is, and look, I think this outbreak has really tested the system hugely, because when you have a school with 1,500 students plus a large number of staff, I think even the way you classify contacts has been put under strain, because a simple split between close contacts and casual contacts doesn't work so well in a school setting, hence the casual plus category. And it's just because if you think about the school environment, obviously people go through many classrooms each day where they're indoors with other people and they may not always be aware of who they're sitting next to, plus other casual meetings, plus even potentially a shared public transport to get there. So it is challenging to classify all the contacts and identify them quickly. And I think the system has worked well, but of course we had that unfortunate situation where I think amongst the 1% or 2% of students who weren't quickly identified and tested, it happened to include an infected household. So it just shows how luck can sometimes be against us with these outbreaks.
Professor Sean Hendy says officials will need to take a look at how they can ensure people who need to isolate both understand the need to do so and are able to. I suppose you'd agree with the need for that right now.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, in the end, if there are really blatant breaches of the rules and people have understood what the rules are and have not followed them, yes, I mean, that there could be consequences for that. I think at the end of this outbreak, which will be brought under control, we need to look at that and just see what actually happened here.
Professor Michael Baker is with us. The school pupil and the family tested negative 3 times and without symptoms. It is not impossible, I saw on Cymex last night, for someone to test negative 3 times, but it is unusual. What's this telling us?
Well, we always have to have a healthy scepticism or about test results, because no test is perfect. The PCR test is incredibly sensitive, but it can still be negative even when someone has a high viral load. And it may be the specimen wasn't collected from the right site, and some people do have the infection maybe in their lower respiratory tract and not picked up by a nasopharyngeal swab. So it has its limitations.
Yes, the 3 times is curious, isn't it? And we may have missing links in this chain of transmission. That is a worry for you?
Yes, I mean, that's the big driver for the need to go into alert level 3, because the great thing, I mean, the good thing about the alert levels, and particularly the what you could call the circuit breaker levels, is that they do put really the whole population into home quarantine for a period. And we know that works very effectively. It will stop the outbreak. But it is, of course, terribly disruptive for people. And we think of all the events that Aucklanders and other New Zealanders will now miss out on because of this. And it's very tough on small businesses. So we really want to do everything we can to avoid this happening. And I think the government's made that very clear as well.
Are you surprised we're seeing different symptoms, muscle aches, general weakness and fatigue, not necessarily respiratory symptoms to begin with, Michael?
Yes, well, these symptoms have always been in the spectrum and of what we see with this virus. And I know we often use the shorthand of cold and flu symptoms, partly because we want to avoid listing that quite long list of potential symptoms that people can have. But it is shorthand. I mean, for flu symptoms, it's always included what are those general symptoms you get with any viral infection, and it's partly because of your own immune system is tackling the virus, but it does create the fever, the muscle aches and fatigue, those more general symptoms. And it is interesting that in that big case series of the new variant infections, I think from the UK, pointing out that the symptoms are more towards the flu end of the spectrum than we've seen before.
Good morning, Jim. The reason we're here again at Level 3 is because the government switched its focus from health to business and didn't shut down for long enough because of pressure to open, says Stephen. Michael, the question is whether with a variant abroad, we came out of the last Level 3 too early. Did coming out of Level 3 create a false sense of security in the community, whereby young people in particular may have felt a bit too free and easy to resume their former freedoms?
Yes, look, I think in hindsight, we possibly could have done better. It's always that really tough judgment call. Overall, New Zealand is getting better at using the contact tracing system and using these short, sharp lockdowns. I mean, that's really been the distinguishing feature of New Zealand's successful management of the pandemic. We've actually had less time under lockdown than virtually every country in the OECD now. So it is a winning formula. But sometimes that we'll get it wrong, and that is because, you know, this particular outbreak, I think, has been tougher than others, and I think it's partly the population that it's infecting. I mean, one of the things that myself and colleagues have argued for is that after a year with the lockdown system that was or alert level system that worked very well when we first encountered the pandemic a year ago, it does need some fine-tuning. It's interesting that it's actually already a seven-tier system, although people may not think of it like that. There is actually already a level naught, which we don't talk about because that we haven't achieved that, and that's when you have no restrictions at all. And we've had two other levels, a 1.5 and a 2.5, that have been used. So we've argued that actually it would be good to look at the whole system and recognise that it's actually got these seven tiers, and say, well, how could we make these other tiers below the lockdown level, which is 3 and 4, work better and refine them? And one of the big refinements would be greater mask use, so that when you come out of level 3, you go to what have been called a level 2.5, and that involves mask use in indoor environments for quite a period while you're at that level. And it also sends to people a very strong message that we actually have to be really cautious for a period after we've had transmission in the community.
I suppose the fine tunings, some people tune out, don't they? Jim, one of the issues we must address is community fatigue. Yesterday, following the Blues-Canes match in Wellington, fewer than 70% of people travelling by train were wearing masks, says Colin Daniel. So, is it time we gave authorities some power to enforce compliance, he says?
Yes, well, I think you know, mask use has been one of those sort of slightly controversial issues from early on in the pandemic response in New Zealand. But I think the benefits it offers, I mean, most of us don't like to wear a mask, but we could, I think, get used to it. I think we are getting more used to it. But we've never really embraced mask use yet. And I think there's still uncertainty about when and where to use them. And I do think that the benefits are that because this is a respiratory infection, that we can resume our activities much faster and hopefully avoid going to level 3 in the future if we have mask use as a really established behaviour for all the high-risk indoor environments we go into. And so I think this may be one of the ways that will help us get through the next 6 to 12 months of with this virus, by having mask culture much better established in New Zealand.
Yes, we have a way to run, don't we? And the reluctance to come forward for testing, Professor Michael Baker, that the Prime Minister mentioned, I wonder if this might be addressed or assisted with saliva testing rather than the PCR testing up the nose, if that became more commonplace as well.
Yes, look, I think the testing technology is advanced in wonderful ways now, and it will just keep getting better and better. And we've got these two areas which I think are valuable. As you say, saliva testing has a lot to offer. It's obviously more comfortable for people, and it appears to be just as accurate and just as sensitive. And one of the benefits is this, and it's more actually in border workers and so on who have to be tested regularly. You can actually have a saliva test taken every single day, and that ultimately is far more sensitive than having a test done every week. I think also for mass screening and situations like this where you have to do a whole school, I agree. I think saliva testing would make this easier.
Pauline of Napier says the COVID vaccine should be given to Aucklanders first and foremost. Clearly they're in the front line and deserve top priority. What's your opinion on that?
Yes, look, I think as we move past the obvious high priorities being the border workers, we can think about the next line of defence. And in New Zealand, the priorities are a bit different from countries overseas, because obviously, it's a matter of life or death at the moment in the UK and Europe, where you have many people dying from this infection, and so you start with the most vulnerable groups. I think in New Zealand, where we're achieving elimination, top of our priority list, of course, is people who have a connection with the border, and it provides another line of defence if they're all vaccinated. So we could think about other priorities in Auckland as partly defending the country from transmission. So that changes the priorities a bit. I mean, of course, we very quickly want to vaccinate people based on their risk of having a poor outcome. And that's based on, age, ethnicity, and underlying conditions.
Janet, actually, and more people than Janet is saying, why does the South Island have to go to level two? It must be known by now where contacts have travelled to. But of course, it may not be known where contacts of contacts have travelled to. Michael, this is the problem here now. We don't know how wide infection may, hopefully not again, have spread.
Yeah, look, that's exactly right. And I think a big advance in the last year has been this ability to do these regionally focused lockdowns. And we've seen that now several times in Auckland. But over the last week, people who may have been infected would have, of course, travelled to other parts of New Zealand. So this is sending a very strong message that everywhere in the country has to be really vigilant for this infection. I think if we, over time, as we get better at this, we may be able to avoid extending level two to other places. But at the moment, I think, again, it's the right thing to do.
And a piece for the conversation that's just appeared, written by you and Nick Wilson. You identify the challenges ahead, and it may seem remote in a sense from what we're going through right now, but in fact it isn't, is it? Because as we said, the pandemic's not over. Enhancing outbreak detection and management is one of your recommendations. What do we need to do right now in your view? Because we do seem poised again here and a bit fragile.
Yeah, look, we wrote this a few days ago, and we were thinking about the huge amount that we've learned in New Zealand over the last year, and we did identify five areas of focus for the coming year we thought that would help us to get through the rest of the pandemic. And one of the big factors for us now is thinking about when we invest in responding to the pandemic, it should also give us this legacy. And that is that we get some long-term gain for New Zealand from all the spending we're doing. And in particular, that gives us better public health infrastructure so that we can, I mean, it sounds a bit morbid, but that we're better placed to deal with the next pandemic. And that we feel much more, as a country, we'll be much more secure if we just keep thinking about everything we spend now, how will it make us better placed not only to get through this pandemic, but to avoid other future problems. And also, of course, and I have talked about this quite a bit, the other big public health problems on our horizon, and climate change and equity and many other areas. And I think most New Zealanders now have a better understanding of why thinking about the health of populations actually is very valuable. And prevention is, the cliche is better than cure. So some of the things we talked about in this was the things about we've learnt about border biosecurity, as you mentioned, better outbreak detection and control, and investing in, you know, the genome technologies, vaccination, having a dedicated public health agency. And also, I think thinking about our decision-making processes when we're in emergencies, because we've done very well, and I think it's partly because we tried to find consensus across our political parties. We've had ways of getting science into the decision-making process. But I think other areas we haven't performed so well, and I think one is investing in research and development around the pandemic. And obviously, we're going to have an inquiry at the end of this, which again will be a good learning opportunity.
Very good to talk to you, and thank you for your time and for fielding all that material. Professor Michael Baker.
Thanks, Jim.